And so to all things canine now. It's that time in the month when we get to learn a little bit more about our four-legged friends. Joining me to explain more, and I think we're up to sort of training, is dog trainer Wendy Claxton. Morning, Wendy.
Hello, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Enjoying the warm weather, which, of course, most dogs are not overly keen on, are they?
No, obviously they like sunbathing, but then they don't like being dragged out in the hot weather or left in a hot car. Yeah. So they like it on their own terms, shall we say.
It's the fur coat, I think, more than anything else, that causes the problems. I know Nuka goes in the garden when she wants to, lays in the sun for a while, turns over, warms the other side up, comes back in and lays on a cold floor to cool down again.
Yes, but I suppose we do much the same, don't we, when we go off to Alicante.
Listen, I have some chest hair, but I don't have a fur coat like that quite. That's another matter. Anyway, we're back to training. Really, we've got our dog, we've got them home, and one of the subjects that we've come across in our time talking is about the use of crates. And some people think, terribly, terribly cruel thing to do. But I'm from the other school of thinking about a crate and think they're actually quite a good thing, aren't they?
Well, yes, we like them. Again, in my lifetime, we haven't used them until recently. But over in Canada and Australia and places like that, they've used them for many, many, many decades. But they're, you know, in the lifetime of myself, they're a fairly new thing. I think they're great, absolutely marvellous. But you have to use them sensibly. They're not a punishment. They're basically a bedroom for the dog, albeit a wire bedroom. And you have to put them somewhere sensible as well, because when you've just got your new puppy home and you've decided to do a bit more training with it, sleep is such an important thing. 17 and a half hours sleep minimum for a young pup. But also, you know, if you've got a rescue dog, they're under quite a lot of stress when you first get them home. So equally, they need a lot of sleep. And it prevents the rescue dog or the pup wandering around. Obviously, if they're going to wander around, if you're not careful, they could wee, they could do all sorts of things. Yeah. So it's a safe environment, but it's something not to be used as a punishment.
No. I was going to say we've used crates for several of our dogs, and never once have we used them as a punishment. It's a case of, I mean, I remember years ago when we had Dexter, he'd got a liking for going upstairs and chewing the odd book and that, and it's most unusual for dogs. But anyway, we didn't use this as a punishment. We got him a crate, put all his stuff in it, and made it his bedroom, so to speak. As you said, there was a bowl of water in there and he could go in there. The only difference was that when we went out, we closed the door on it so that he couldn't get out to stop him from chewing the books. So it was never really a punishment. And when we got back, we opened the door. He was pleased to see us. But when he wanted to rest, he went back in the cage of his own accord, because that was his own safe space. And yeah, that's how it becomes.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you put the bed in there, I mean, to start with, people say you can feed them in there. I've never have, but I've sort of like put the odd thing like a bone or a few munchy bits in there that, you know, like a bit of tripe sticks or something that they could nibble while they're in there so they feel comfortable. But the interesting thing is about crates is also if your dog's going to have an operation at any age, and this is, you know, today we've, our chum Rosemary with dear Lewis, at the age of 11, I think he is, he's got to go and have a cruciate operation. Now, this is a little chap who's obviously older. So we went over last night and dropped it off for Rosemary. So after the operation, because we know he's going to have bed rest, well, bed rest is all very well, but, if it's in a crate, they can still get up and wander around. And we got a lovely message this morning to say Lewis has taken it to it like a duck to water, and he slept in it all night. So, you know, there won't be an issue now when he's had his operation and he's under recovery. So
it's a safe space, really. And to say the only time you need to shut the door is when you're out. If your animal or your dog has a propensity for going and chewing up the odd slipper or moving clothes around or doing whatever they shouldn't be doing while you're out. That's the only time you need to shut the door, and that's not really a punishment. That's basically to keep the order of things, that the dog has its own space and knows it's his own space and won't get worried if you do shut the door.
Yes.
And that's the thing. So I'm hoping that little Lewis actually comes through his operation okay. He's 11, which is a fairly grand age for a dog. And I'm glad that he's making use of the crate, but it can be used as a fantastic training aid as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I personally, with a young dog, I would get into shutting the door throughout the day. So you really have to say, right, this is sleep. You're having your sleep. You're not walking around. It's one of those things you have to play it by ear. But definitely as a puppy, shut the door throughout the day. Obviously, shut it at night time. And some people say, well, their dog gets a bit nervous. Well, wait till they're dozy and then just push the door too. If they create in the crate, don't let them out if they're herding themselves around, because then if you let them out whilst they're creating or you open the door again, they've learned that that's quite clever and they can create again and then you open the door. So it's, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. It's a lot easier to do with a puppy than a rescue dog. And if you try often with rescue dogs, if they've come from a pound abroad where they've come with 200 other dogs, to be put in a crate on their own might be difficult, if I'm honest.
Well, we have Archie, who is a rescue dog. He did actually have a crate, but when we first got him, we got this travel crate. It's not metal at all. It's a framework with a material covering with various different zips to open it. And he came back in that, and he's always seen that as his bed. And to this day, it is still his bed. That we keep on the landing. At night time, if you say off to bed, he will go there on his own.
Yeah,
now, there is a zip on the front of it to close it up. So we zip it up. But this little chap got clever one day, because he's a fairly clever little boy. He actually managed to unzip the thing himself from the inside and get out. So fortunately, there is a little catch that you can put onto the zip to stop it from being undone. But he loves it in there. It's his space. And if he's ever worried about anything, that's where he goes.
It's good. It's very good. And funny you should say that. Obviously, we've got dogs from the same rescue centre, because our latest little girl, Peggy, did exactly that. Completely unzipped herself.
Yeah.
On the way home in the car, and was seen sitting on the back seat, big as you please. So there we go.
Yeah, they're very, very clever, some of these dogs. But they do have their uses, and if they're introduced carefully, they are a very, very useful tool. The other thing that we've actually managed to discover with Archie, and something that you mentioned as well, is with getting your dog to come back, a power of recall, and also getting a lead on. You can combine the two things with just one command. And if you can instill it into your puppy from a very early age, it makes life so much easier. And that's very simply lead on. Archie understands it as come back, mm-hmm. or I'm going for a walk.
Yes.
Either one, he will understand it. If you say lead on, he's there sitting ready to go.
Yes, it's amazing. We train this at class, and I'm sure other people are now doing it, but you can't invent a word, obviously. Well, you can if you're Trump, but we do this at class. We learned many, many years ago that the word come, and everybody does this, you call the dog inappropriately when it's running in the other direction, or you're calling it away from something. So they very quickly learn that come means come away from the thing I don't want you to see. And so they stop, they look, they see what it is, and then the little stinkers go haring towards the thing that you didn't want them to go to in the first place.
That's it.
So we always say lead on. And as you say, it means nothing other than come and get your lead on. But you don't need the word come, it just get your lead on.
Yeah.
So you do it in the house, and every time you put the lead on, also the collar, you say collar on, put the collar on, lead on, put the lead on. As you say, it means we're going for a walk. So with our girls, they can be anywhere and we'll just shout lead on, collar on, and they come trotting around and they sit quietly, you put the collar on and the lead on. But to get them sorted for that, what I would recommend is you just spend some time of an evening. So you've got your young pup. You should, you know, within the first day, you should get a collar on it, but you must never have a collar on in the crate. That's a very important thing. Make sure the dog never wears a collar in the crate, because it can get its little foot stuck under the collar and they can choke themselves, hang themselves, do whatever else. But so make sure that's very important. So get them used to, and throughout the day, just put the lead on and the collar on, and you can sit in a chair with them by your side, and just if you've got a slip lead, pop the lead on and off the dog, just saying lead on, lead off. And the dog is so used to that movement, because they get very hand shy. Again, when you've got a young pup that's hooning around all over the place, we're very quick to try and grab them. And if you do lean forward and grab your dog, I'm afraid you've got about 2 years very hard training to do to undo that. So I would say the very first thing, almost before sit or anything else, get them used to that lead, because it's so important, as you say.
Well, that's exactly what we did. I mean, I know we spoke to you when we got little Archie, and that's exactly what we did. We spent hours with him. It was a lead on thing. It was done in the garden, it was done in the kitchen, and now when we're out and about, we like to find spaces where we can let the dogs off and have a run. But of course, there are other people around with dogs who are not quite so keen to let their dogs off, who want to walk their dogs, which is fair enough. And of course, Archie has a liking for other dogs. And if he sees one, he will make a bolt towards the other dog, meaning no harm. He just wants to say hello and say, I'm Archie out, let's have some fun. But of course, you can't do that. So we actually use the phrase lead on. And it actually works. He turns around and comes back and ignores the other dog on the lead.
Yes, brilliant, because they literally compute it as, we want you to get your lead on.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I mean, you obviously use the word come and train the word come, but it's probably one of the best things that we teach in class, because it gives, there's with the recall, which is obviously the word come, you've got various ways of doing it. You've obviously got the word come, you've got the word lead on, you've got the whistle. So there's sort of about three ways to get your dog to come back to you. But we tend to ruin the word come, because invariably the dog's hurtling in the wrong direction.
Well, I think it's one of the things for, you know, anybody that's got a new puppy or a rescue dog to actually try and work out for themselves. The other thing with it is, of course, is classes. Now, many people poo-poo dog classes and think, oh, don't really need to do that. But there's a double-edged sword to training classes, because it's not just about the training, it's about the socialisation as well, isn't it?
Yes, I hope they don't poo-poo classes, Tony. But anyway,
I know some people that do and think, no. My dog behaves itself.
I know, and as you say, also if you're of a certain age and you've had dogs for many years, we do actually think we can do it ourselves, and you know, it's easy. How difficult can it be? We've had dogs for years, but you just forget. And even myself with our new little dog Peggy, you know, she's actually in training class, because obviously we're the trainers, but she's still in training class, and we get her to be multi-handled by other people, so it's all good experience. But yes, I would always recommend, obviously I would say this because that's what we do for a living, but I would recommend that you take your dog to class. It's very sociable from a human point of view, because you'll meet like-minded people, probably from the same area. And even yesterday, there were a little team of people lurking outside after class, swapping numbers, and hopefully they'll all meet up for a walk. And they might even discuss commands and practice. Who knows? Oh, God. They might
so much to be had. So much to be had from puppy or from dog training classes, not just for the dogs, but for the owners as well, in a social sense, for all concerned. Very quickly, because we're running desperately short of time. It's surprising where the time goes. I know there's a couple of things we need to talk about. One is insurance.
Yes.
Very quickly, the importance of insurance.
Well, it's hugely important because if your dog runs out in front of a car, you're taking your dog for a walk and it sort of slips the lead or it doesn't come back, it sees something, it chases something, it might run out into the road, cause an accident, you will be claimed upon. It might get into a field, chase sheep, do lots of damage there. Again, you'll be claimed upon, all sorts of reasons. But also, you know, health and well-being. To go to vets with a big injury cost a lot of money. And I know people think, oh, well, you know, the trouble with insurance, it hikes the vet fees up. But that's nothing we can help, really. And it's the same with owning a car. You get it insured. So I would always recommend that you have your dog insured and pick your insurance policy wisely. Some people that get pedigree dogs, it comes with free insurance for a certain amount of time. But just look, there's loads out there. I don't know one. I mean, we use various different ones and we've changed over the years. So sometimes I think your local vet might even come up with a sort of like a plan type thing. But do that.
Okay. Without mentioning any insurance companies, get yourself some insurance. The other thing that you mentioned very briefly sort of when we were talking off air was, you talk about fences, but you added a little word in at the front end of it, freedom fences. Yes, what are we talking about?
Well, freedom fences, they sound gorgeous, don't they? But they're hideous things because it's based on an electric cable that runs around the outside of your property. Yeah. It's a hidden one. And the dog wears a collar, which has an electric pulse go through it. So obviously, if it goes out of the property or goes to the edge of this freedom fence, it gets zapped on its neck.
Is that a good thing?
No.
No, I was going to say, I'm shocked at what I'm hearing here.
No, it's the most, I think it's shocking and I think they should be banned. And the amount of people that I know that talk about it, think about it, invariably have big gardens. Well, all you've got to do is fence your garden. So then people then say, well, you know, my garden's X number of thousands of acres, teehee. And it's too expensive. So I'm thinking we shouldn't have got a dog then. But what I would always recommend is your dog doesn't need the whole of your garden. It just needs an area. So fence an area for the dog and keep it dog proof. Make sure it's always dog proof because things happen. You know, things fall down, things break. Foxes, badgers, all sorts of wildlife can get in. So make sure they haven't dug under your fence. But I'm anti because it's the knock-on effect. So dogs can, when their adrenaline is up, and we heard about this today on the Ashdown Forest, a dog had got into an enclosure where there's four or five strands of top electric fence going around. So that would have given the dog, and there's sheep, cattle, horses, all sorts of things in this enclosure. And a dog had got in and was chasing the stock. Now, what would have happened there? That dog, its blood would have been up. It would have had a high prey drive, everything. Or it would have had the red mist, anything that you can describe, which makes a dog sort of run. And then it can't feel pain. So what happens? It would have run through the fence. It would have been zapped quite badly. But because it was chasing and in a world of it would have taken that. But then the downside, it wouldn't have necessarily been able to come back out because then it would have remembered the zap and the pain. And there's no way that dog's coming back out again.
No.
So then you've got a trapped animal in amongst all the stock. So, you know, these are the things. So with a freedom fence, and it's hilarious how they market it, a freedom fence. So I know of dogs that have run out of the garden because they've been chasing a deer or something like that, or a fox. They've taken the zap. And then they can't get back in. So the owner's looking desperately for the dog. And the dog's sitting up the road or something because it literally can't come home because it's too scared. If it comes home, it's obviously going to get zapped again.
I think the message there is use the word fence. Get a fence. Do not get a freedom fence. That's absolutely terrifying. And it reminds me somewhat of a training aid that was doing the rounds for a while that was also based on electric shock therapy, which really is one of the most disgusting things ever if you're trying to sort of bring a loving dog in, you know, into society, really. I suppose it's just not, well, it's just not the done thing.
No, and no. I'm very anti these things. And yeah. If you resort to that, basically give your dog back to where it came from.
Okay. But,
yeah, so there we go. That's that then. That's me me puffing and blowing. Just one thing, with again, with these, anything you put around the dog neck that gives any pain is going to then cause issues. So if you touch your dog around the neck area, they can bite because they flinch, they do all sorts of things.
We'll elaborate a little more on that one, I think, for next time. But for now, Wendy, we, surprising to say where the time has gone, we've run right out of time. Thank you for talking to us today. We're a little bit wiser on so many bits and pieces there to do with puppies. For now, thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Tony.